Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and today I'm joined by Doogie Critchley. Hello, Doogie.
Hello, Pat.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Well, should I say I'm good? I'm a little bit under the weather, actually. I don't feel my absolute best, and I think Grace, my girlfriend's just got COVID, so I might have early onset of COVID. Brilliant. And also there's about to be a world war, so I'm a little bit nervous about that as well. But otherwise, yeah, I'm surviving.
Great. I mean, I don't really know how we transition out of that, to be honest with you.
I'll tell you why. War veteran Henry Hill.
Yeah, I'll tell you why. It's because me and you are going to go back at it again, Pat. You know, round two.
Right, it was one of the best podcasts we've had in years, by all accounts. And all it took was to get two of the lariest people on Football Daily on at the same time so that we could argue.
Yeah.
Joe looks pretty relaxed in that whole podcast, which must have been a first.
It's because Joe feeds off conflict. Joe himself is actually quite conflict averse, but Joe really enjoys witnessing conflict. He finds it very enjoyable. So he was having a great time. He was just stoking it up between me and Henry.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I think the reason that Mike's put me back on here is in the blind hope that I'll just disagree with something you say. So I don't know. I might have to just wait and listen to your opinions on some of the players just to kick off for no reason. But I'd like to stress to people that I actually would only disagree with you if I genuinely believed it. And I think it's going to be harder this week, maybe, to really find true conflicts. But yeah, let's see.
You say that, but I mean, look, okay, so this week we're going to talk about players who deserve an England call-up. So these are players who either haven't been called up yet or have been on the periphery of the squad or maybe been kept out of the side by one of Southgate's weird favourites because, you know, all managers have their weird favourites, but I feel like Southgate very much does. And to be honest, it's been a really interesting season for people who follow England's football team, which, unfortunately for the podcast, does not include me. I do not follow England in international football. Doogie inexplicably does, despite being an actual Scottish person. Like, not a Scottish person like we say Chris Hamill is Scottish. Doogie, you're actually Scottish.
Well, it's a little bit confusing, but yeah, I grew up in Scotland, was born in Scotland, but my mum is English. I've always supported Scotland in rugby, but England in football. I'm a very confused guy.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't really make any sense.
Well, I understand supporting people in different sports because I supported South Africa in rugby and the Netherlands in football. So, makes sense of that one. I wasn't born
in
either of those
countries.
The truth
comes out then. See, it's not that weird what I do.
Except that, you know, the Scottish and the English are not like historically BFFs.
Not the best of friends, no.
No.
But maybe it gives me a good perspective on the rivalry, I don't know.
Henry, are you just a vanilla garden variety EDL, you know, just massive BNP supporting England fan?
I'm a few of the things you said, but I won't outline which. I have followed England to a few tournaments. I do love it.
Really?
Yeah, I'd rather go watch. Yeah, I went to Brazil, Russia.
Oh, cool. Like,
yeah, so I do enjoy it. But I prefer international football in general in terms of, like, I think when a team gets upset it's great. But I do enjoy England, but I'm not gonna sit there watching like England versus Andorra or San Marino, etc. I'll save my viewing pleasure for the special occasions, I suppose.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I get that. I do think international football, what annoys me in a way about like all the international breaks during the year is that they make me sort of hate international football. And actually, you know, the World Cup, the Euros, they are some of my favourite things in the world. Like, they are such special occasions, but they kind of get infected by, just a week of the BBC talking about how England are about to smash like Montenegro and nobody cares at all. The people who do care are lunatics. But I think maybe a way into it is to look at the players, because you can always get invested in an individual player. And as I've said, there are so many interesting talents on the outskirts of the England squad this season. So today we thought we'd go through some of those, see who we think does deserve a call up, see who maybe is going to struggle to get a place. So I think we can start in the defence, right? Because there are a couple of names here that are getting some traction at the moment. Does anybody have a defender who they think should be getting more minutes for England right now?
I do. Yeah. Right. I want to put forward my main man, Max Kilman. I think he's been really, really good for Wolves this year. And I know they play in a system that kind of protects their centre-backs, but he's been available, I think, for every single game. I think he's played every single of their games so far, which I think is 24 at the time of recording, along with Cody and Saar. And I think he's been absolutely excellent, to be honest, playing on the right-hand side, despite the fact he's left-footed. Roman Saiss and Cody have been there for years, and it's helped that he's sort of fitted into a system that they know so well from their days under Nuno. Bruno Lage at the start of the season did try and be a little bit more expansive, but has slightly regressed into what they've known for years. And the signings that he's made have really come off. Jose Saar's been sensational. I think Quang Hee-chan got off to a really good start before injury as well. And Kilman's just been, I think, one of the unsung heroes of the Premier League so far this season. And I think in a year in which Harry Maguire has been very poor for one... I don't want to go too hard on him because I think he's been, you know, tarnished enough in the press and the media over the last few weeks. But yeah, he's been very, very poor. John Stones hasn't really got a look in at City, despite the fact I think he's one of England's best defenders when he's fully fit, which albeit isn't saying very much because our centre-backs are probably the weakest area of the squad now Declan Rice has emerged. And Joe Gomez hasn't really had a look in for Liverpool at all. I think the game on Saturday, was it, against Norwich, was his, I think, one of his first Premier League appearances of the season. He was playing at right-back. So I think in a time when England's centre-backs aren't in either very good form or you know, have great fitness, then I think Max Kilman has to be in the England squad. I think why not? It's the perfect time to blood him. I'm not saying he would necessarily start in Qatar, but I think he definitely deserves a look in and a bit of training under Southgate.
Okay. I mean, look, I quite like Max Kilman. He does quite a lot of defending. I'll give him that. Like he's over four tackles and interceptions a game, which is not really something you really want your centre-backs doing, but he's pretty good when he does it, and he's good in the air, and he's left-footed. And am I right in thinking that the only other left-footed centre-back England really have available to them is Mings?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
which is a problem.
In that context, it definitely makes sense. However, even though I really like his name, which is like, you know, the name of a hitman, the Max Killman. It's such a good name. I don't know if it's like one of those situations where I think, God, this guy has to get called up. Oh my God, like, what is Southgate doing not calling this guy up? Whereas there's another guy here who I think I kind of am feeling that way about him. And it's not, you know, Benjamin White, who
Good use of his full name there, yeah.
Has turned into a pretty good... Well, it's because Ben White... I'm sorry, but there's not going to be a world-class player called Ben White. It's just too boring.
Like, he also doesn't want to be called that as well.
What does he want to be called?
Benjamin.
He does actually want to be called Benjamin.
Yeah, yeah, he came out and said that.
Tight. So what I've actually done there is respect Benjamin White's personhood.
Exactly.
Accidentally. But yeah, I think Adam Webster is the guy we have to talk about here. He's one of those players who every time I see him, he's good. And I always expect him to be older. I forget that he's only 27, but he's 27 years old, which is nice. He has never played for England. He's used to playing in a back three. He's extremely, extremely good on the ball. Brighton have had a good defense the last two seasons. He hasn't played as much as you'd think. When you look at his numbers, you know, I was kind of like, Adam Webster must have been basically an ever-present. He's only got 1,200 minutes for them this season, so he's 11th in the squad. But when you look at passes into the final third, when you look at progressive passes, he's in the top 8% of centre-backs for progressive passes. He's in the top 4% of centre-backs for passes into the final third. 6.5 a game, which is like quite close to Granit Xhaka levels, which is, and Granit Xhaka is like 6th in the Prem for final third entries. I mean, this is pretty special stuff. Defensive actions, totally fine. You know, 3.5 a game. That's actually pretty decent given that he's playing often in a back three where centre-backs tend to actually rack up fewer tackles and interceptions because there are more of them. And he's really good at moving forward with the boys in the top 5% for every metric when it comes to carrying it. Progressive carries, the distance he carries it in a game, carries into the final third, carries into the penalty area. Just a really, really, really comfortable, skillful guy on the ball. And his aerial win rate is also amazing. 76% of his aerial duels he's winning. So I just don't really see what's not to commend him. I mean, when you think that Harry Maguire, I don't really want to get on the the anti Harry Maguire bandwagon. But at the time, I hated paying £80 million for him. And people were like, well, you've got to bear in mind, though, he's really mobile and he's really dominant in the air and he's a great passer. And he can play on the left, even though he's a right-sided centre-back. I'm sorry, like, this description just applies perfectly to Adam Webster. In fact, it applies more to Adam Webster than it ever did to Harry Maguire. And so I just think this is a guy who... I'd certainly start him over guys who play in more conservative systems. Even though I like, you know, say, Tarkowski, I would pick Webster over him. I don't know. I feel like this guy should maybe just be an automatic centre-back starter for England right now.
Ooh. I mean, I kind of know what you mean. I do. You've very eloquently put your point across there, and I wouldn't have any issues with it. But I just think Tomori. I really don't know why Tomori isn't being considered one of the main players going with this England squad at the moment. I just think Tomori has been absolutely fantastic. I think my one reservation about like Webster is he's very much part of this Potter system. And I wonder if you removed him from that, how successful he potentially be elsewhere. Although I do just, because, you know, when I see Duffy go to Celtic and have an absolute shocker, come back and sort of play really well back at Brighton, I just think there's maybe a familiarity from everything that I've been researching into, like Dan Ashworth, etc., and Brighton at the moment. It is just it's a really nice place to be. It's just a really good club. And I think that often that really does elevate the players involved. I'm not saying that England doesn't have necessarily that same attitude, but I just do think that the expectations and perhaps the atmosphere is going to be completely different there. And I don't know if Webster, although you know, to be fair, you have to give these guys a chance. I don't know if Webster's necessarily the man for it at the moment. It's sad he wasn't picked up in the previous squad, if anything, for me. When we played Albania, San Marino, etc., these are the games where really I think that was an important moment to get him involved again. And I just look at Tomori, I look at what he's done going to AC Milan. He's so good for them. I think he currently has the highest points per game basis of any player in Serie A at the moment, which I know is it's a bit of a silly metric, but the point is he's very...
Sorry, in what division, Henry? Can you just say the division again?
Serie A. What do you want me to say?
Serie A. No, I liked it. Thank you.
Okay. After you picked me up on that, after you picked me up on that scatological time, which killed me in the comments, I'm nervous to say anything around you.
Actually, this is not a criticism. If anybody at Football Daily stands for being a knob about pronunciation, it's 100% me. But I just enjoyed it. It was done so casually that I feel like I wanted to highlight it.
You know what? Because
more.
Dukes and I have to sit and watch Serie A highlights quite a lot, I think, from Continental Club, you do get quite influenced by all the commentators you hear. Like, there's some incredible commentators off the Italian YouTube channels.
Absolutely. I've realised through that we've all been pronouncing Szczesny so wrong for years.
Is it not like Szczesny?
It's something like that. I won't even begin to try, but it is so different to Szczesny that I'm just not even going to go there. Also, Fabio Paratici, everyone always hammers me in the comments. Apparently, his name is actually Paratici. So that is correct.
I'll link you my favourite commentator when I find him. He's excellent. He's everything I'd ever hoped for in Italian. But anyway, listen, I just think tomorrow he's quality defensive output at the moment, does play in a back four. I think he could be quite flexible. I think you have to reward the fact that he's gone to AC Milan, really shifted up his career and made it work. He's got Romagnoli out of that side. I think playing next to Simon Kjær is brilliant experience because Kjær's a fantastic guy. He's got two like passes into the final third. I know some of the more kind of flashy numbers when it comes compared to Webster, certainly I think Tomori is going to look perhaps slightly worse, but that's just because that Brighton defence are encouraged to push forward. They're encouraged to sort of surge a bit deeper, and they have sort of systems in place. They have Bissouma there just to kind of keep rank when people do surge forward. So I'm not surprised that Webster does perhaps look as flashy as he does, but I think Tomori, the rest of his numbers are brilliant. I think he's been one of the standout centre-halves in the Italian top flight, and I think you have to reward that. And I don't know if Southgate continues to have this kind of sometimes slightly bizarre attitude towards players in other leagues, then I don't think it's progressive at all. I think Tomori is at the right age experience to really go and show what he can do, and I don't see why he can't forge his way back into the squad. And he was injured, but he's back again. He's played really well. He was excellent in their victory over Sampdoria recently. So yeah, for me, why not? Why not Tomori?
Well, also, I think there's a real argument for Tomori in the, I don't know, maybe not this year because of the World Cup. I think with the World Cup, you just pick the guys who you're like, this is going to be our best defence. But certainly in between major tournaments, I think international managers should be trying to build relationships. And I think it would make a lot of sense if, say, you know, maybe he wouldn't want to do it this year, but if next year Southgate said, my centre-back pairing for the future is going to be Ben White and Tomori, and as a result, we're going to play them together as much as we possibly can, with the hope that they really develop as a partnership. Like, that would make a lot of sense to me. What I don't like is the idea that, like, this guy is in form, therefore he should get in the England squad. This guy is in form, therefore he should get in the England squad. No, like, all you need, you have to watch the way that really elite sides build those relationships between, you know, the guys who play on the right, the guys who play on the left, between particular midfielders and particular attackers, and particularly between centre-back pairings, to see how that benefits the side overall and makes it a lot better than it would otherwise be. So, I don't know. I think that right now, I think Webster is probably the best centre-back not playing for England, though I do take your reservations about him, Henry. But I think that the sensible thing for England's long-term health, and if they're going to try and, you know, win the next Euros, the sensible thing would probably be to say, these are our guys who are going to be centre-backs for us at the next Euros. It's going to be Joe Gomez and White. It's going to be, you know, Tomori and Gomez, whatever, whoever it is.
Yeah, I mean, just quick, on Tomori, that. I mean, he's been part of the under-20, the England youth system. He's been part of this whole, like, process, which was basically what St George's Park was created for, under-19s, under-20s, under-21s. He's got, I think, something like 40 caps at youth level, which is a lot more than most of the players that enter the system in the manner which you're talking about. So I don't think it'd be a completely blind suggestion, although he is in form. I don't think it'd be completely blind to put him in there, because even from his time at Chelsea, he will know a lot of these guys. He will have played with a lot of them before. There will be an element of familiarity. So I don't think it's completely a gamble to sort of throw him into this situation at the moment.
Sure, I think that's fair. So I don't know what we should do here. Should we decide on one of these guys, or are we happy to just kind of cover them and say they all deserve more minutes for England?
Nah, let's decide. I think it's more fun.
Okay, well, I don't know. Dukes, I've got to be honest with you. Kilman is at the bottom of my list here, even though I do like him.
He is young, though. I think
he's not that young. He's older than Tomori, right? He's 24.
Yeah, and with less experience as well. But I do really like Kilman. But no, having heard all the cases, and I think what we're going for is probably the 2024 Euros. I think Tomori's probably the guy that I think has to be in the... I think he should have gone to the Euros last time, to be honest, and was really unfortunate. So yeah, I'd get Tomori in there for sure. I've been banging his drum for quite a while.
Would you put him in there over Ben White? Would you put him in there over a fully fit Joe Gomez? I'm probably missing some other guys, but those are the people who come to mind.
I probably would over Ben White, to be honest, even though I think he's been really, really good after his first sort of difficult month at Arsenal. Arsenal's defence has been excellent since that opening period. But yeah, I think he's got more credit in his bank than White, to be honest, at the moment, having performed so well for Milan for over a year now, and, you know, been central to their two title runs as well. So yeah, I'm going to go with Tomori.
All right, well, Fikayo Tomori then is going into the England squad.
Yeah, love it. I was going to say, I think over Joe Gomez every day at the moment. I think Joe Gomez, if he's serious, I think he's going to have to leave Liverpool. That's just my sort of slightly.
I know, but it's a pity, because like, with Joe Gomez, the issue certainly isn't talent or performance. It's just getting on the field. I mean, he can leave Liverpool, but he just needs to stay fit for like 3 years, really. And then by then, we're talking about somebody who's actually approaching the end of his 20s, right? He must be 24 now, something like that.
So he's also been really unfortunate that Matip's just been really, really good this year as well. I don't think anyone really saw his form coming. I think he's been, for long stretches until the last month, actually better than Van Dijk, to be totally honest. So yeah, I think Gomez has been unlucky in that respect. And Konate's really started hitting form as well, just at the wrong time for Gomez as well. So it's just unfortunate. They've got a great squad now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on to the midfield. The midfield might be maybe more controversial. I'm not entirely sure. Henry, you went last on that one. Do you have a midfielder who you would like to put into the England setup?
Yeah, strap in, everyone, because judging by Pat's notes, this isn't going to go well. I love James Ward-Prowse. I think he's quality.
Oh my god,
he's quality. He's
he's fine.
I think he was so unlucky not to go to the Euros last time. I thought he's played excellently every time he's played for England. I think he's probably the most capped player we've ever had at sort of youth level or something ridiculous like that. 10 goal involvements this season. He is the best free kick taker in the world. I think he's playing at the moment in a Southampton side, which I probably the best I've seen them under Hasenhüttl at the moment. And considering kind of the way they have to revamp themselves every summer, I think what Hasenhüttl does there is remarkable. And the fact that they've got like Ward-Prowse to stay is brilliant. I think if Aston Villa had picked up Ward-Prowse in the summer as they tried to, that would have definitely progressed them a lot more. I appreciate that some of his numbers aren't always going to be fantastic, but I just think when it comes to like having a leader in the middle of the park, we're seeing Henderson really drop off at the moment. I do think that Ward-Prowse deserves an opportunity to have a consistent run and certainly a tournament. I think he really deserves to have that moment there, and he can make a difference. He can make a difference. Like if you need someone to put a ball into the box, if you need someone step up and take a free kick on the edge of the area, I know you say we've got Trent Alexander-Arnold, but you should choose James Ward-Prowse because he's at the moment there is no one better at taking free kicks than him in the world, and that's just a minor part to his game. I absolutely love him, and I think it's about time that he's just basically been stifled by the fact he's going to be at Southampton, but that's what he wants to do. That's where he wants to kind of be a legend, and I kind of respect that in many ways. I don't think that should always be a limitation. If we're so obsessed with taking Calvin Phillips to every single competition, I don't see why James Ward-Prowse shouldn't have that opportunity.
Well, I think that's a reasonable point, though. I would say that Calvin Phillips is much more mobile than James Ward-Prowse, and can cover defensively in a way that James Ward-Prowse can't really. And also the thing about James Ward-Prowse is, in open play, he doesn't actually do as much as you'd think he would. Like, because he is such, his technique is so incredible, you'd expect that he would at least put up big passing numbers, but he kind of doesn't. Like, he's not a particularly incisive passer. And I'm not saying, like, his set pieces aren't great. They are. I'm just saying that the percentage upgrade that he offers on set pieces to somebody like Trent Alexander-Arnold is counterbalanced by the downgrade I think he is in midfield, because you've got Declan Rice there. He's just going to be a nailed-on starter in midfield, but I think you can probably find a better option in there than Ward-Prowse. He doesn't really dribble or carry the ball. He doesn't really do very much defending. Like I say, his passing's just kind of okay. And to be honest with you, it's not like England are in desperate need of improving their output from set pieces. Like, their set pieces have been pretty handy for a while now. So, I don't know. Like, I understand what people say, but, like, with Ward-Prowse, it's just always, like, he scores a free kick or he gets a great assist. And then people say, yeah, he's got to go to you know, whatever major tournament is coming up. But I think even when you look at those goals and assists, yes. You know, like, the two against Spurs, for example. The delivery's amazing, but he is under absolutely no pressure and he just whips the ball in. I don't think that a really good team is going to give him that amount of space to like whip the ball in. I think that's kind of like something you can't rely on happening. And also, if it were England, Trent Alexander-Arnold might be in that position, or Reece James might be in that position, who I think is, like, you know, probably just as good when it comes to open play. He's certainly better. I don't know, like, I don't have anything necessarily against James Ward-Prowse, except that I don't think he's that good.
I just think he's a lot better this season than he was when he was getting in the England team last year. I mean,
fair.
Southampton don't have that much possession of the ball. I think it's like 47%. It's really not that great compared to most sides. A lot of their work is kind of just hitting, being sort of very organised and hitting people down the wings and on the counter, relying on like getting Che Adams in behind. And within that, Ward-Prowse is the best player. His own pass percentage, I'm just looking at it now, is like 86%. So it's not as if he doesn't know what he's doing on the ball. I just think it would be, I think maybe given the opportunity to play around better players, to be in a more expansive system, that's when we'd really get to see what he can do on that basis. That I don't see why he doesn't deserve a chance to be there. I mean, he is literally like Mr. England. If you look at everything he's done sort of going through the ranks, I think it'd be a real shame. I'm not saying that everyone who plays loads for the junior sides has to get in, but I do think there's some like merit towards it. Like, this is the whole point of the system, and if he's justifying what he's doing, I think it's if like a player just comes along and has a slightly good few months, I think that's a pity to put him in over someone like Ward-Prowse, who's consistently been a pretty good operator for a while now.
Yeah, though on the other hand, you know, with Tomori, our rationale was, well, we're building a team for the future. and he's good now. He's not great now. He's good now. Like, let's get him in and he will be great in the future. Well, with Ward-Prowse, like, I'm sorry, but Ward-Prowse is not part of the England team of the future. Like, he's not especially old, but he's... Yeah, but he's not going to be, like, at his best in 3 years' time. Like, he's not particularly mobile now. That's not going to improve with age. Like, I just think there are names on... I understand your argument of, like, he hasn't necessarily done anything to deserve moving out of the England setup, but there are other players who could push you out of the England setup, right? And I think some of the other names we've got written down here, Doogie, if there's one that you'd like to pick, they seem to me to be... to have strong cases to take that place.
Yeah, well, I mean, before I go into the suggestion I want to put forward, it really sort of depends with James Ward-Prowse as well what formation we want to play as well. I mean, if we go 3-4-3, I really think we need a scenario where it's Rice and Bellingham in midfield as the
the
two.
Yeah, Bellingham.
With the wing backs, and if it's 4-3-3, then you're probably looking at Bellingham, Rice, and then a more attacking option like a Mason Mount or someone like that in midfield. And I just don't see Ward-Prowse being a sort of regular in this England side. So I'm kind of with Pat. I would probably look to the future in this chat. And although Conor Gallagher, I think, had an excellent start to the season and has performed really well for Crystal Palace and deserves enormous credit for, you know, taking a bit of a chance, going out on his second consecutive loan spell to a club that were going through a massive transition under a manager that was new to the Premier League, I think it's Jacob Ramsey that's been more impressive in the last month or so. I think he's been absolutely excellent, to be honest, and looks like he's got a little bit of everything as well. He's been really sort of a key part of them this season after not really excelling last year, to be honest, in the limited minutes he got. I think it's been a bit of a surprise to most Villa fans just how effective he's been. Some of his finishing this year has been frighteningly good. Remember that goal against Arsenal, that goal he scored running from a long way out against Norwich, the two goals he scored the other night as well. He's been brilliant, and he's eighth in the squad for minutes. He's their joint top scorer in their squad with 5, and no one has more goal involvements in the league than his 6. And in a year where Villa have looked really inconsistent, even since Gerrard's arrival, their results in the last 5 games, I think they've only won 1, have been really pretty up and down, and their defence has been pretty poor throughout. I think Jacob Ramsey has been probably their outstanding player across the whole season. I don't know whether I'm forgetting someone there, but I can't think of anyone who's been more consistent across a whole campaign. And I think Jacob Ramsey seems like he's got a bit of everything. He can drive forward with the ball really well, knows how to finish. He helps out defensively as well. Like, he's kind of got a bit of everything, and I'm not suggesting he's going to be a starter in Qatar, but I think if we're building towards the Euro 2024, then I'd like to see him get an opportunity over the next year or so. I'm not necessarily saying that he needs to be in the March call-up, but he definitely, you know, deserves to be under consideration.
Yeah, I think this is totally fair. Like, I mean, I think England's probably their top 3 central midfielders should be Rice, Ramsey and Bellingham, and just work on those guys, because Bellingham, you know, he's still incredibly young, and at some point he won't necessarily have a step back, but he'll probably have some consolidation seasons, you know, where you see his numbers like not necessarily improve, just kind of be what they were before he takes another developmental leap. Ramsey is that little bit older, so you'd expect him to maybe stand up to playing all the time a little bit better. But, you know, this is a guy who's still 20 and he already looks like a useful player. So if he continues to improve, he could really turn into something quite special. Like, yeah, his defensive numbers, they're just okay. His passing numbers are good, not anything special. But, you know, 2 years ago, Declan Rice just looked like somebody who did a load of defending. And that was kind of it. He wasn't a particularly good passer. Certainly wasn't the dynamic runner that he is now. At least not in the stats. And yet now his numbers have just blossomed in every regard. And he just looks like a Rolls Royce, just an all-round midfield star. So I think Ramsey is a really, really good prospect for England to invest time in. When it comes to Conor Gallagher, I like the player. I like the player, but he's a weird kind of midfielder. He's playing a weird role. Like, he's getting loads of touches in the final third, getting lots of shots from close in, really good XG numbers, good shot numbers, reasonably good creative numbers. But he actually doesn't pass a lot. He doesn't get on the ball a lot. So I'm not... It's just a strange role. And I think that if you're going to have somebody playing number 10, it's not going to be Conor Gallagher. If you're going to have an attacking option in a midfield 3, it's not going to be Conor Gallagher. I think Mason Mount at the moment is a better version of Conor Gallagher. England could afford to wait. if he goes back to Chelsea next season and suddenly you see him playing in a possession side and he's really flourishing in a different role, then that's great. And England can still, you know, bring him into the setup. That'll be totally fine. He's only 22. But right now, I just don't know where his home is in that squad. I think if you put him in and play him as a central midfielder, maybe he's great at that, and maybe there are people out there who watch more of him at youth level and know that he can do that. But that's not what he's doing this season at all. So it would be a little bit of a gamble, I'd say.
I think it would be a shame to not. I don't necessarily see what Jacob Ramsey's done, which is better than Conor Gallagher this year in terms of getting in the squad. I think Jacob Ramsey's been.
It's more that he just looks like a midfielder. Conor Gallagher doesn't look like a midfielder. He looks like an auxiliary attacker. He looks like when Ramsey used to play on the wing. That's what his numbers look like this year, but with fewer touches. Yeah, but you say like, that's all it is.
You know, 3.8 tackles and interceptions, 24 pressures. These are good numbers. Where that shows that he could play that defensive role if he needs to be. It's not like Mason Mount is exclusively now playing further forward. He did start playing further back, sort of on the left of that midfield three. I don't see why Conor Gallagher couldn't do that role when asked of him. It's not as if, you know, looking at the way that Gareth Southgate lines up that squad, it's not as if he keeps players to their positions all the time, does he? Sort of relentlessly playing Reece James and stuff like that in the centre of the park. I think Ramsey's obviously in better form right now, but I think across the season, what Conor Gallagher has achieved is better. He was in the last England squad. I would rather see a continuation of Gallagher in that side at the moment. And like you said, give Ramsey a bit of time to show that this is more like perhaps a consistent level of form and see what he can do further down the line. I'm not going to sit here and say I've watched tons of Jacob Ramsey, but I just do think that Gallagher has been super impressive this term. And I think that has to be sort of, I don't see why he would be justified being removed from this England squad at this point.
But I just don't think that's how it works. Like, I think, like, I understand what you're saying, but firstly, 3.8 tackles and interceptions is good. It's not great. It's not like he could play a defensive role. And creatively, like I say, there are just better options. Like, yes, people will get moved around, but there are players you make that move for because they're really good. And there are guys like Conor Gallagher who are pretty good as currently constituted and might be great, but we don't know. Like, he's not going to be a guy who, like, you completely change your shape to accommodate. And I just look at him and I think, like, just wait and see. Like, can we see what he can actually do in possession? Because at the moment he doesn't do anything in possession. Like, it just seems like he's it's more about the fit than it's about the quality. I think you can make the argument that Gallagher's having a better season than Ramsey. I'd actually be kind of on board with that. I think that's fair enough that he's achieved more, but it's not about that to me. It's about, like, how you fit people into the setup, in the same way that you don't say, oh, well, you know, Reece James was great and Trent Alexander-Arnold's great and Kyle Walker's great, so you need to play three right backs in the England team. Like, it's understood that sometimes you lose your place because there's somebody who's a better fit for the particular challenge that's being faced and because there's a finite number of places in the team.
Yeah, but I don't know. I struggle with this one. I just think that if on the basis that Rice is going to be that kind of anchor of the England team for many years to come, potentially Phillips next to him, I think there's just more license. For me personally, I think there's more flexibility and license for Gallagher to be involved in that midfield at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough.
This whole debate feels a little bit futile because we just know Southgate's going to pick Ward-Prowse and probably for the next year as well. So, yeah, I think it's all a bit futile.
Yeah, okay. Well, should we move on to attack then?
Let's.
Forwards are a little bit harder in a way. Maybe this is just because it's such a strong area for the England squad. And again, plays a part and setup plays a part. And also, I think it's complicated by the fact that a bunch of these guys are more positionally versatile than we're used to. You know, like Foden. Is Foden going to play off the right? Is he going to play as a 10? Is, you know, you've got guys like Saka who could just deputise in three or four roles. You've got Emile Smith-Rowe who's had a couple of England call-ups, who's played off the left wing recently, and now they're talking about moving him to a false nine position. It's really, really difficult. But Henry, I wondered how you felt about Tammy Abraham, because like you say, Southgate has not been great at recognising players who've achieved things outside the Premier League. And Tammy Abraham is the top scoring Englishman in Europe right now.
Can I just say one thing about international footballers? You do create a sort of pointless affinity to certain players. I think the problem is that the squad changes all the time. Sometimes you just want the players that you like to stay in. So I think that's going to skew a few of the way I see things sometimes. But Tammy Abraham, 14 goals and assists this season in a Jose Mourinho side. I think that's class. He has looked really good. He's grown and grown into that role at Roma. I think he's the highest paid player there, actually. So there's a lot of weight on his shoulders. I think if they can make the changes in the market that perhaps Mourinho wants to going forwards, that he's going to start featuring heavily in like European competition and doing bits, because he's been brilliant. I think they love him over there. I think on the basis of like Dominic Calvert-Lewin isn't really... He's obviously been very unfit this season. Ollie Watkins, I'm still not convinced, really, all the time. I think he's slightly overhyped. Really? I do think that we need that alternative to Harry Kane up there. I should be very clear. I think Harry Kane should play every minute that he can for this England side. But, yeah, Tammy Abraham absolutely has to be in this side for me, at least as that reserve kind of centre forward option at the moment.
Interesting. What have you got, Dukes? Do you agree with that, disagree? Because to be honest with you, I think it's hard to make a case that Tammy Abraham shouldn't be in the squad. Like, even if it just comes down to Calvert-Lewin hasn't been fit, England need another centre-forward.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we can't get... Sometimes you don't need to get too fancy with it. Like, Tammy Abraham just scores goals. Wherever he's been, he scores goals. Like, you can't really describe it sometimes, but he's just got that knack. He's got that ability. And he's shown it again at Roma. He's hit the post on numerous occasions as well. He's been quite unlucky. Missed some big chances, but generally, like, his goal output has just been consistent for years now whenever he gets minutes. And I think he's a great understudy for Kane. But yeah, I agree with Henry. Kane now looking back to somewhere close to his best, or at least somewhere close to last year's levels now with that performance against Man City. He looks like the sort of man of the moment once again. But the one I'm most excited about in the forward areas has to be Jared Bowen. Like, I don't know what more he could have done this in the last 3-4 months. To get a call up. He's really been carrying that West Ham side when Mikel Antonio's form has really suffered since about October, I think, in terms of goal scoring at least. So Jared Bowen's just been absolutely sensational. I think he's got 8 goals, 8 assists in 25 starts this season. He's running about 0.6 XG per 90. Still only 24 as well. And just massive respect for him, because I was reading an article about how he nearly gave up on the game in his late teens, and then obviously he had to work his way up through Hull, etc. West Ham actually paid a lot of money for him. I think it was around £20 million. And I wasn't quite sure about him, to be totally honest, to begin with. But now I see those rumours linking him with Liverpool, and he just does look the most Salah-like sort of talent in the Premier League right now, in terms of like that playing style, in terms of that goal-getting ability as well. So it does make sense the more and more I think about it. And I just think he's been sensational this year and should be in the England squad.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I don't know whose place he takes. That's the only thing. Like, I really like Bowen.
I can't remember who was in the last squad. Saka, is the issue, Foden. Sancho wasn't in the last one as well, was he?
Yeah, the thing is, I think Saka and Foden are... They're at least as good as Bowen, I think.
Can he take Mings's place?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the great thing that Bowen gives you is that, unlike Saka and Foden, he's a goal scorer. That's what he does. Though he's got 8 goals, 8 assists, he is primarily a goal scorer. We see him as a goal scorer rather than a creative player. And Saka can cover a bunch of roles. That's fine. He's going to get minutes all around the squad. But he and Foden are going to be more involved in build-up, whereas Bowen is that guy who can be a goal-scoring threat, who can run in behind. It's nice to have that left footer playing off the right. I think Jared Bowen deserves a place. But one of his disadvantages here is that he's 24 and there are a bunch of guys who are like 20 behind him who kind of deserve it just as much. So I don't know about Bowen. It would be really intriguing if he went to Liverpool, because I'd be fascinated to see how good he can actually be. He's definitely a very good player, but I don't know why it is. I can't really argue it. But I guess I look at Liverpool and I think, I'm not sure I see that. That looks a bridge too far to me. I don't know why.
Yeah, it's difficult to know. I think he's also been quite unlucky in terms of this March call-up that, you know, Raheem Sterling's been so excellent in the last couple of months. Sancho's really started to get going at Man United. I thought he was sensational at the weekend against Leeds. And actually in the last few games, really. So the competition is so, so fierce, particularly, you know, at at wing, you know, on the wings, at right back. Yeah, they're probably the most competitive areas, to be honest, actually. There's not that much depth at centre back, left back at the moment with Chilwell out. It's going to be really competitive in March. But I'd like to think Bowen deserves a shout, at least for a call-up.
Are you guys taking Emile Smith Rowe?
No.
Fair enough.
I think kind of the half the reason you were saying about Jared Bowen, I think just for some reason I don't really see the space for him in the squad. I don't think we need Emile Smith Rowe at the moment. I think he's good. He's been brilliant this term, but I just like the England's attack, kind of how it is. I don't think scoring goals is ever going to be our issue at the moment with some of the players that we have at our disposal. And I'm not sure like Smith Rowe really in this cycle really changes that. So I think what we're getting with Saka and Foden is so good, Sterling, etc. Don't upset that at the moment. I mean, it's kind of the same with Jared Bowen. I'm not really. Like, I'm sure he could go, but for some reason, which I can't really explain, I just wouldn't care if he didn't. And I feel really bad for saying it, but that's...
What about Grealish? Oh, how are you guys feeling about Grealish after this season so far? Because, I mean, this is the thing. To me, if I cared about England's attack, it would be like Kane, Sancho, probably Mount, and then somebody else. And that would probably be Sterling, like, most of the time, but it could be Grealish. You could find Foden in there. You could play you could basically play anybody. But maybe those are like my nailed on guys, I think. But Grealish, it's kind of weird, right? That Grealish was not a starter for England at the Euros, then made a £100 million switch to Man City, and is still kind of not expected to be a nailed on starter for England again. Like it's very odd.
Yeah. I think he started some of the games in, was it September and October for England?
Yeah, well, he's got to start
and it finally
sometimes.
Felt like, and I think lots of people were taking this sort of mickey on Twitter being like, oh, it takes a £100 million move for Southgate to start rating him. But on the basis of current form, like, I probably wouldn't, I mean, if you're doing it on form alone, but obviously you want the best team, best squad to go to the World Cup. And would I rather Jared Bowen went to the World Cup or would I rather Grealish? Like, obviously Grealish. So... I think I'd probably keep him in the squad or maybe drop him for this squad, see if it reinvigorates him a little bit. But his issue's not really his level of performance for Man City. I don't think too much. It's just being better than the other players they've got at the moment who are all in great form.
Yeah.
And Pep likes to rotate a lot. Like, I don't think Grealish has like put in a disastrous season by any stretch of the imagination. Like, he just hasn't played that much, really. He just hasn't been better than... Sorry, I nearly swallowed that. Hasn't been better than Sterling, Bernardo, even Gabby Jesus at times, Foden, etc. Like the competition there is arguably fiercer than England. So yeah, I want Grealish to get into the squad, and also he has banked a little bit of over the last year or so. He's been one of England's most exciting players, which in this England squad, which has often been pretty turgid to watch, does count for quite a lot.
Yeah, I agree. He's got that kind of. This is kind of what I was saying. He's had that maverick quality every time he's played for England. You do just want him to be there. You do get that excitement, that thrill every time he sort of comes on. You think something might change now. I mean, didn't happen that too much at the Euros, must be said. But yeah, I just think his general creativity is better than Bowen. And I just think that certainly be able to pass from deeper. I think for that reason, you definitely should keep him in. I think that link up with Kane is just too important.
Completely agree. Well, I think we need to bring it to an end there, guys, because Dougs, I know that you've got a hard out at 5 o'clock. Is there anything that you'd like to plug before you leave us, Doogie?
What would I like to plug? Look forward to the Football Pyramid this weekend on Euro Football Daily. Dave Jackson versus Henry Hill, and I'm afraid my mic was playing up a little bit, so it doesn't sound too great from my perspective, but Henry Hill and Dave Jackson were on phenomenal form, so check it out.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Henry, have you got something else to plug, or is it just the same?
Go watch our Galatasaray video if you haven't already. If you know, we did something a bit different, there it is, go enjoy it.
Nice. Thanks very much, guys. Thanks for your recommendations, and thanks to you at home for watching or listening. If you're not subscribed to our podcast channel on YouTube, then get subscribed, Football Daily Podcast, or use your favorite podcast app, and you'll never miss an episode. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next time. Bye.